is the Next Trip Podcast with aviation insiders Doug and Drew. Together, with more than 40 years of industry experience, they are creating a network for other av geeks and travel enthusiasts to obsess about all things aviation. All thoughts and opinions are their own.
G'day, welcome to Boarding Pass 223, operating on March 4th, 2024. This is Doug, an airline pilot, and I'm here with my buddy Drew, an airline ops manager and private pilot trainee. You had lessons today. You didn't fly. We're going to talk about that. We are here to discuss aviation topics from an industry insider's perspective. Drew, I have been out of the country,
off the grid,
off of electronics. I don't know what's gone on this week. Tell me about it.
Well, first of all, we'll start off with the work week was pretty calm. No major issues. It was a nice quiet end to February. You know, I'm going to have to pinch myself, but I feel like winter is over. Now, as soon as I said that, there's probably going to be snow in the forecast in 3 days. No, so it's very calm end. Operation's really good. And I should say, can I tell the listeners?
I'm sorry.
Just full disclosure. Full disclosure. Doug is currently in a car in some nondescript garage, not even a hotel room.
Airport garage.
Airport garage.
We're an aviation podcast. I'm sitting at an airport.
Well, that's good. I mean, that fits into the content. But you're right behind you, I see a young girl who has like Mickey Mouse ears, a pink headset, curly hair, and she's trying not to laugh.
She is. She can't hear you, but every time I laugh, she laughs.
Oh, yeah, there she is.
Thank you. I know the listeners hear us talk all the time about how we'd squeeze the recordings into our like daily schedule. I literally am sitting at Sacramento waiting to pick my parents up at the airport. This is the only time that we have to record this weekend is... Yeah. This 1 hour while I'm waiting for my parents' flight, sitting in the car in a parking garage with my 4-year-old behind me.
Well, you know, about that, your parents are visiting, and I asked you if they were non-revving. They are not non-revving because Dale does not non-rev, sir. He is not ready for that change in lifestyle.
His work is still paying for him, yes. And they just sent me a picture. They're in L.A. right now, about to fly up here. They're both in first class, of course.
Of course. Well, I saw the picture, and the picture has Dale, your dad, committing sacrilege because he is in a Delta Club, and he has on a jacket with the company logo on it, and he says in his text to you, he just got kicked out of the Delta Club.
Yeah, because he's wearing our company jacket that I gave him. And he's in the other airline.
The most garish, not even like a discreet company jacket, like a bright blue in your face. No, that's fun. All right, so, but what did you say? You said when he does retire, you were going to take like a couple weeks off and just show him the ropes.
Yeah, I want to do what you and Ian just did.
Mm-hmm.
Pick a point on the map and hope to get there and not really care. Figure out like 10 connections to mm-hmm. get to where we hope to get, knowing that we won't necessarily get to where we hope to, and we don't really care where the connections are. Basically, take 2 weeks to just fly business class anywhere in the world.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, honestly, Ian and I were going to Vietnam, and then that didn't look good, so we were going to Bangkok. That didn't look good. Then we're going to Singapore. So, of course, we ended up in Hong Kong.
In Hong Kong, yes.
And it was fabulous.
I said, we're, my dad and I will probably end up in Hong Kong, which is that really that bad? No,
it's not bad at all. Take advantage because the flights to Hong Kong are not incredibly full yet, but eventually they will be when the traffic comes back.
Yeah.
And, you know, speaking of Hong Kong, I'll probably go there again. So my mom's going to Colombo at the end of this month, at the end of March.
Yeah.
And she'll
send her through Hong Kong.
Well, yeah. I mean, the goal is for her to fly our company flight to Singapore and then connect to Colombo from there. But it doesn't look great. But Hong Kong looks great. And I might actually go with her because I'm basically a local in Hong Kong now.
So we joke about that. And in 3 weeks, the girls have spring break. We're hoping to get somewhere in South America because they're in Spanish school now. We're going to end up in Hong Kong. I guarantee it.
it's a great crossroads. You can tell that I'm in a good mood, which would seem to infer, right? You could infer that I had a really good flight training this morning. I did, and we did not leave the ground. And to be honest, I showed up last. I had a late night last night after work. Went out with Ryan and Patrick. We haven't gone out forever, so we spent a little bit.
Was that an SP model?
Yes, they gave me a 747 SP model, you know, belated birthday present. I'm like, how did you find this? These are very hard to find.
Time out. Our young listeners are probably wondering what an SP is. Can you explain?
Yeah, it's a 747 SP. So for a while, some of these carriers, Pan Am, United, a few others flew this airplane. Qantas, Iran Air, a few others. I think Olympic flew one. But anyway, it was a 747.
Yeah, I think you're right. Yeah.
Yeah. So it was a 747, but it was very short. It's SP is for special performance. And it, for those days, it had very long range, which meant it could go from San Francisco to London, which was considered long range back then before the 747-200s came out. And then the 400s blew the SP out of the water. But I remember the company used to fly those from Sfo to Osaka, even though it didn't need that range. It was a better size for those markets. It's a ridiculous looking plane. I mean, it's not.
It is. The tail is bigger than the regular 747, and it's short. It's stubby. It looks really weird.
I've never been on one. Have you?
I haven't either. No.
It's a rare find. So that was really nice to get. So thank you guys. I know both of them listened to the show. It was a big occasion, or it could have been bigger. It was the day of Ryan's check ride for his private pilot's license.
But the winds, yesterday?
Yesterday, yeah. So, but the winds kicked up, so he was only able to do his oral. He was successful in his oral. Okay. And then
that's good.
Yep. And then it's going to be delayed. So I'm getting close to my solo, hopefully in a month and a half. And I was telling Joe, my flight instructor, about Ryan, and then he goes, "Oh, was it Melissa?" And I'm like, "What? How did you know?" I guess there's not that many.
It's a small community.
These are the check ride people.
Yeah.
So he knew, and this is in another state. But anyway, so I get there, and I'm like, not feeling great. I haven't had a lot of sleep. And then Joe comes in, and it was crazy. He's like, "Hey, do you want to just do some ground school?" I'm like, I absolutely want to do ground school because there's a lot of stuff that I'm studying on my own. So it was nice to sit with him for 2 hours and go over all that stuff and make sure I'm on the right track. And I got to tell you, you know, we have the Bible. There is something else that's like the Bible of aviation for general aviation. Do you know what I'm talking about, Doug? It's the 2024 FAR AIM book.
FAR AIM.
Yeah, yes. It is thicker than most religious books.
Yeah, you need a screenshot where you're holding up right now with my daughter in the background, me sitting in the parking garage. Hold on, let me do it. I'll get it. There we go. I got it.
So I would like to read a scripture, if you will, from this from the good book,
Preach.
The FAR AIM. It's very bossy. There's a lot of thou shalt not. There's a lot of guidance. And
if Moses knew what was coming in the FAR AIM, imagine if he had to chisel that. If he had to chisel the FAR AIM.
For AV geeks, when you decide to do something with them, you should have them put their hand on this FAR AIM book and swear to the FAR AIM Bible. You know, there's a whole other podcast called FAR AIM, and there's three guys, I forget their names, I've listened to them a few times. They are very good, and they actually make this thing enjoyable. You know, I am a nerd, and I come in and I told Joe, I love this book. I really do, because it puts in writing things that we feel should be. It puts it in writing. So now I can just tell people, no, you will not. I have the right of way. If I am an airplane in distress, I have the right of way, and it's in this book. It's pretty cool.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Guess what? I have it on my iPad, so I hit the search function, and I find it immediately.
I don't know if people know that. There was like a list of 70 questions that you're supposed to do as a pre-solo. So Joe was like, why don't you practice these questions? So that's how I did it. There's an electronic version of this, and you go into the search.
It's so much easier.
If you are in your pilot training and you are thumbing through hundreds of pages to find your answer,
Get the electronic. Electronic, yes, yeah. Exactly.
I mean, sometimes it's not. I mean, if you want to curl up with a good book and you are an AV geek like I am, yes, get the book and thumb through it. You should have it because your inspector or your check ride person may ask you where you get the information, and you would have to show them in a physical book sometimes. But other than that, so no, we had no flying, but it was a great session today, and I'm on track. I'm hoping to have all my studying done for my written test by the end of this month. Listeners, contributors, get ready for, I don't want to say useless general aviation information, because I think, you know, I will pick out stuff that is meaningful for airline people, for flight attendants, for pilots, for 777 pilots. You might actually find this stuff interesting because you can relate. And if you're Aaron in LA, or if you're Eric in Seattle that are not with the airlines, I think they'd still find this stuff interesting, like which aircraft have the right of way. We can even go through that later today. Shrimps. Let's go from FAR AIM to shrimp in China. What story do you have about shrimp?
Oh my gosh, I have not told you this. I said save it for the podcast.
Mm-hmm.
I went to Beijing this weekend, or no, not even this weekend. What day is it today? Friday?
Today's Friday.
I was there earlier this week. We stay in the financial district, which most cities around the world, basically where the embassies are, there's not a lot of hole-in-the-wall places that you can find. I go to Beijing. I go to China. I want to go to some hole-in-the-wall restaurant, some greasy spoon type place. There's nothing like that around the embassies in the financial district.
There's no nice family-run little place you can go to for like a little cafe.
It's basically it's catering to the politicians, the diplomats, all of that. Really hard to find. I end up at this really nice restaurant near the hotel, and I order shrimp as an appetizer. I'm like, oh, okay. They called it volcano shrimp on the menu, and volcano shrimp usually comes out in like a little bowl. It's got some spices on it. They bring a plate of literally like cooked shrimp with the heads, the tails, the legs. I've had that before, but I was a little bit surprised. So I start peeling it. It's in this like soy sauce mix.
Is it deep
all over
fried?
My hands. No, dude, it was in the shell. It was like shelled fish shrimp that came out on this plate. Really nice restaurant, really quiet in here. I'm the only Caucasian. Everyone else is Asian, most likely probably Chinese. And I'm trying to crack this shrimp, and it's getting all over my hand, so I'm, like, wiping it with the napkin. The waitress sees me doing this and brings out these plastic gloves to me so that I don't get it, like, very nice, but so I don't get my hands messy. I put these gloves on, and think about I know a lot of the shopping bags now, like at Safeway, Costco, whatever, they're all these, like, recycled material, not very loud, but think of 10 years ago, a grocery store bag that makes so much noise that everyone looks. So I put these gloves on and I start peeling the shrimp. It sounds like I'm crinkling these old school shopping bags. Everyone turns to look at me.
And I'm
like, now I'm like starting to sweat because it's hot. Like it's volcano shrimp.
Why
so
didn't
it was
you
spicy.
Use like a spoon or something to?
There was how do you peel like literally the shrimp with the head and the legs? How do I peel that with the spoon? I was like, I have to use my fingers. I'm sitting here in this really nice restaurant, bunch of business people, Asian. Like I'm the only Caucasian sitting in this restaurant, and now all of a sudden I'm wearing these shopping bag gloves on my hands that's crinkling and making so much noise in this place. And then, to make matters worse, as I'm peeling the shrimp, it poked holes in the gloves, so all the soy sauce and juice is getting on my hands anyways. And I feel like, because they brought me these gloves, I was like, well, maybe I'm supposed to wear these. I don't know if it's custom. So I'm making this noise, still getting messy hands, breaking heads off of the shrimp, thinking to myself, I just want to finish this, get my check, and get out of here. I just want to leave this place.
Was it at least good?
Oh, it's delicious.
Oh, good. Okay. So it's worth it.
Yeah. Yeah. But I'm sitting there. I'm like, dude, if Drew was here, if Ian, if all of our friends, they would be laughing so hard at my crinkly gloves and ripping heads off shrimp in China with everyone else looking at me while I'm sitting here making a fool out of myself.
All right. So speaking of shrimp, you saw Boeing's smallest airplane, 737 MAX, in Air China livery, flying.
Great. Yeah, great transition. I like that.
it was a stretch.
It was. But China, I think it was January, they just recertified the MAX. Since the grounding in the U.S. in 2019, China has not recertified the MAX until like 3 weeks ago. We literally pushed off the gate. We were holding short of the taxiway. there was an Air China 737 that taxied by. And I said to all the other pilots, I was like, no way, that's a MAX. That was the I've been to China quite a bit in the last couple months. That is the first time that I've ever seen a MAX actually operating. I was blown away by the fact that I saw that.
Can I stop you for just a second? Did any of the other pilots know that that was a MAX?
Probably not.
These are aviation professionals.
No, actually, no. I take that back. All the other guys, all four of us, we all flew the 737. Mm-hmm. I guarantee they knew it, but mm-hmm. a lot of pilots may not. I know where you're going with this.
So the reason I brought this up is because you sent this meme that was hilarious, and it says...
I made that, actually.
You made this?
I did,
this
yes.
is good. It has pilots... Who's this... This is a Canadian...
I think that's Drake. It's Drake.
It says, pilots be like, the media can't get anything correct about aviation, and it has Drake with his hand up. And then it has another picture of Drake acting all cool. And then it's the pilots talking. It's like, hey, look, there's a 787-900 parked to a 747-800. This pilots.
I can't tell you how many pilots call. We pass the 787. They're like, oh, that's a 787-900. Like, yeah, there is no 900.
Well, we were joking about that, and a lot of people in the aviation industry, if they see three aircraft, they call it, aircrafts.
Right? Aircrafts, multiple, yeah.
Yeah, it's aircraft is the plural of aircraft. And even today, I sent you pictures from Martin State Airport where I'm flying, which is a historic airport.
Hangar, not R.
You have Lockheed Martin and Northrop Grumman in there, but this professionally made sign has Hangar 1, Hangar 2, Hangar 3, all spelled H-A-N-G-E-R, like a coat hanger.
Yeah. I remember it like A-R, Hangar, mm-hmm. is A for aviation.
That's a good way to think about it.
I hang my jacket on a hanger with an E. I go fly in a hangar with an A. For aviation. Yeah.
This is one of these things that makes me twitch, especially when I see it coming. A lot of mechanics, aircrafts, all over, not just our company, but all over. It's aircrafts to them. They keep saying, I've even corrected them, but what can you do?
We could talk about this for hours. Let's move on. What do you say?
Please.
Drew, we talk all the time on the show about how eventually everything leads back to aviation. In fact, we found an angle regarding Taylor Swift and the NFL Super Bowl, for Pete's sake. Well, here's another one for you. Did you know there's going to be a total solar eclipse next month?
I did. And I know one of our contributors is planning to go to one of the locations to see it. It's probably, he was deciding between Mexico and Texas.
We're going to talk about a couple of our friends here in a minute, but the eclipse, which is when the sun is blocked by the moon, is on April 8th. It's going to last for several hours as it crosses from the Pacific coast of Mexico across the U.S., stretching from Texas to Maine, and then it'll exit off the eastern coast of Canada. Shout out Greg and Nate, who both live under the path of totality. But I mentioned it relates to aviation. Drew, how is that?
Solar eclipses, Doug, are not a new phenomena. In fact, they're arguably as old as the moon and have captured the imagination of humans since the dawn of time. Aviation, on the other hand, is pretty new in the grand scheme of things. But since the invention of the airplane, humans have found ways to chase eclipses, whether it's jetting off to far-flung corners of the world to see an eclipse, or quite literally, chasing it in an airplane. I have not heard of that.
This was fascinating. I remember hearing about this, and for the episode, I did some research. The most famous airplane chase was in 1973 when a group of astronomers and physicists flew aboard Concorde 001. Now, I didn't realize this either. Concorde 001 was a prototype and a testbed for what became the supersonic airliner that we know of as the Concorde. In 1973, it had not yet entered commercial service, but for this particular flight, the airplane was specially modified with overhead portals, windows, basically, for the scientists to better collect the data.
Flying at Mach 2, the airplane intercepted the eclipse over Africa, and it stayed in totality. Now, when you say totality, you're talking about total darkness, right?
Total darkness, yes.
So it stayed in totality for more than 74 minutes, a record which still stands. For reference, this is 10 times longer than totality lasts when seen from a stationary location. While this year's eclipse is sure to be studied by scientists from around the world, a different flight, two actually, will attempt to follow the eclipse, albeit not for a record duration.
Yeah, I don't think an A220-300 can match the speed of the Concorde, but 2 weeks ago, Delta announced that it'll plan a route of flight 1218-1218, which is an A220-300 that flies normally from Austin to Detroit. They're going to plan this along the path of Totality. The flight is scheduled to depart from Austin shortly before Totality reaches Central Texas, and it'll try to stay in it as long as possible. The flight, which sold out almost immediately after Delta announced the plan, comes with a disclaimer. Drew, this is funny.
It's not going to be funny for the people who just wanted to get to Detroit. Right? Because it sounds like this is just a regularly scheduled flight that kind of follows the route that they think the line of the eclipse will be on. And they're going to be like meandering to make sure that they follow it. Meanwhile, someone's like, I just got to get to Detroit for a meeting. Dispense with this. Of course, it comes with a disclaimer, Doug. Delta says, quote, while Delta flight plans have been designed to maximize time within the path of Totality, this is subject to change due to factors outside of Delta's control, such as weather, air traffic control, that could impact timing and aircraft. Thanks, lawyers, for ruining the special moment, as you guys always do. But yeah, I mean, if they bought this ticket just for that, and the airplane is on mechanical, stuff happens, you know?
Yeah, it does. Yeah. The funny thing is, this... Again, as you said, this was a normal flight, and they announced that they were going to flight plan it in the path of Totality. Mm-hmm. It sold out within minutes of them announcing that. Mm-hmm. They have now released a second flight, that extra section. We talk about extra
sections on the show. If we knew about this, they have an extra section now.
They're doing a second flight that follows the path of Totality.
Wow.
Sold out.
Okay. Oh my God, forget about carrying people between Austin and Detroit. Just do Totality flights and you'd like, you know, fill all of them up. Get Spirit on that. Is Pippa laughing at our jokes?
Yes, she is. She can't even hear you. She's laughing because I'm laughing.
All right, well, that sounds fun. April 18th. So we must mention Aaron, and he's going to correct something about our analysis of Totality, if you will. He's going to explain. He's going to school us on it, I'm sure. I guarantee he
will correct you. You said darkness. Mm-hmm. It does not actually get black. It gets darker, but not darkness.
Not completely. Yeah, Aaron,
there you go. Aaron, I corrected you. Or I corrected Drew. Yeah. You don't have to email me. Thank you.
Yes, Aaron, stop typing. No, I know it doesn't get completely dark because I have been in a total eclipse.
Yeah, it gets darker. It does not get pitch black.
Yeah. All right, April 18th. So, Aaron, let us know where you will be going.
April 8th.
April 8th? I thought it was 18th. All right. April 8th, let us know where you will be viewing it. Aaron likes to go to more exclusive places or more... what's the word? Far-flung places. So he'll be in Mexico for sure.
Yeah, I was going to say, Aaron could go to Detroit or Dallas or Cincinnati. No, he's going to go to Puerto Vallarta to see it. He'll watch it come on the coast of North America because he can.
Yeah, because he went for the last one, he could have seen it in Darwin, Australia. But no, he went to East Timor. Because that was, you know, so easy to get to. Doug, you just returned from China. Let's send you back there with our first news story.
In a sign of thawing relations between the U.S. and China, the U.S. Department of Transportation just announced an increase in weekly flights that Chinese airlines are allowed to fly. Beginning on March 31st, Chinese airlines, Drew, this is huge. They'll be allowed to fly 50 weekly flights. While this is only one-third of pre-pandemic levels, much higher than the previous levels. The DOT said the approval is a significant step forward in further normalization of the U.S.-China market in anticipation of the summer 2024 traffic season. Prior to August, each government only allowed 12 weekly round-trip flights. I know we've talked about this. 12 weekly between the countries. That's like 1.5 per day, basically. This jumped to 18 in September, 24 in October, and 35 in November. The move was praised by trade group A4A, or Airlines for America, as well as the Chinese embassy, with them saying, quote, we're glad to see the positive progress made on increasing direct passenger flights between China and the U.S. We're working to further facilitate cross-border travel and promote people-to-people exchange between the two countries. Surprisingly, and Drew, this struck me, other international markets have seen faster growth. Capacity between the UK and China is already 30% higher than it was pre-pandemic.
Wow.
The U.S. Commerce Secretary Gina Raimondo told Reuters, quote, if China returns to 2019 U.S. tourism levels, it would add $30 billion and 50,000 jobs to the U.S. economy. Now, after I typed this, I was thinking about it. We live close to an outlet mall.
Mm-hmm.
Pre-pandemic, I remember going to that mall. Every single time I was there, there were busloads of Chinese tourists who would get dropped off at the outlet mall. Uh-huh. People literally travel to the U.S. I have an exchange sister from
Brazil. To buy stuff that was made in their country?
I have an exchange sister from Brazil. When she was pregnant with her son, her parents flew to Miami from Brazil to shop for the baby stuff, to get car seats, baby clothes, all of that. At this outlet mall, every time we were there, there were Chinese tourists who just got dropped off by the busloads to shop. The fact that they're saying $30 billion and 50,000 jobs, I believe it because I've seen it.
Well, what's interesting is A4A, Airlines for America, is promoting this. And these are additional flights by Chinese airlines. What that means is a lot of those customers are going to connect to A4A airlines. So they're welcoming
that traffic. But it's also reciprocal, because if we're allowing Chinese carriers to increase to 50, we are hoping as an industry that China will then allow U.S. carriers to reciprocate. Because right now, we only have 35, which means that's an additional 15 a week that our carriers should, hypothetically, by China, be allowed to fly.
Well, you know who is probably laughing all the way to the bank, if you will, is Cathay Pacific. They are not beholden to these rules, even though they're part of China. We have an agreement with them where Cathay Pacific is flying three times a day to Kennedy from Hong Kong, just one market, a number of times to LA, to San Francisco. So they used to fly to DC. I hope they'll come back. But it's interesting that that is part of China, but not really. They still get a little bit of an advantage still.
It's funny you say that, because when I get there and I turn my phone on, I get, every time I go to a different country, I get the text, welcome to Germany, welcome to UK, here's what data you get. Mm-hmm. I land in Hong Kong, I turn my phone on, it says, welcome to China, special, what do they call it? The
special region.
Special
administrative.
Yes, that's it. Special, welcome to Hong Kong, China, special administration region.
Mm. Okay. Whatever. I know my phone works great there. That's all I care about. Doug, speaking of growth, it looks like another large airline, the world's largest, actually, by most measures, is about to place a major order. By most measures, you say, so I believe that's probably the most passengers. Or it could also mean the most flights.
I think definitely American the most flights. Is largest. They're the largest by fleet size, by revenue, a couple different measures,
yeah. All right, it's being reported by various sources that American is on the verge of a deal for 100 narrow-body planes. In a possible win, or it looks like it's leaning towards a win for Airbus and another hit for Boeing, the order is expected to largely favor the A321 with a smaller amount of MAX 8s. American had been considering an order for the MAX 10, but with the latest Boeing production and certification saga, airlines have been shying away from committing to the largest variant. The order could be announced as early as today during an investor call. Wow, exciting.
This is huge. Tell you what, let's move into the next story, and then we can kind of combine our discussion.
Yep.
We're going to go back to Boeing for the final one of this week. FAA Administrator Mike Whitaker gave Boeing an ultimatum saying the manufacturer has 90 days to develop a comprehensive plan to address systemic quality control issues. Whitaker said, quote, Boeing must commit to real and profound improvements. Making foundational change will require sustained effort from Boeing leadership, and we are going to hold them accountable every step of the way with mutually understood milestones and expectations. Boeing CEO David Calhoun responded saying, quote, Boeing's leadership team is fully committed to addressing FAA concerns. We have a clear picture of what needs to be done. Boeing will develop a comprehensive plan with measurable criteria that demonstrates the profound change that Administrator Whitaker and the FAA demand, unquote. Plans and milestones have yet to be publicly released, but the two leaders and their teams met for nearly 7 hours on Wednesday to begin developing a path forward. And breaking news, like an hour ago, Boeing is in talks with buying back Spirit Aerosystems. We've talked a lot about Spirit in Wichita. Yeah. It had been Boeing until, 2004, 2005. They spun them off. Now Boeing is looking to buy them back. Personally, I think that Boeing saying we're going to spend billions of dollars to buy back Spirit mm-hmm. is a huge, really important step to show, hey, we are actually taking this seriously. That's not cheap. Buying back a supplier like that is going to cost Boeing billions of dollars. And the fact that they are willing to do it shows we want to actually spend money to make sure that we get every little detail right. I think this is a really important step.
Yeah, I think this is good. We were actually recommending that they do that, to bring that in-house so there's less layers. What did we say? We said, you know, that's fine if you have someone who makes a tray table for your airplane, but someone who makes the whole fuselage for your airplane?
who makes 75%? Yes. Actually, thanks, Pips. Shout out to our friend of the show, Joe, my buddy who flies the triple with me. He actually texted me about 30 minutes ago and said, you and Drew were right. He sent me the link to the article and he was like, you guys called it, that Boeing would actually buy Spirit and take them back.
Right. And, you know, they have the 737-7 MAX, which just can't get off the starting line. Neither can the 737-10. I don't know what they can do with the 10, but again, Boeing, just buy Embraer's commercial line. Really promote the Embraer 195E2. Call it the 797 if you want, right? And discontinue. It's going to be a sad day because I love the 737-700 and I love the way the 7 MAX looks. But it's time to start winding down the 737 program. The writing's on the wall. You know, they're having all these issues because they have an old design and they keep sticking stuff onto it. And it's never going to be as, I don't want this to be as safe, it's never going to be as consistently produced as a 787, which was a whole clean sheet of, you know, clean sheet, new design, and it is very reliable. As we speak, this is like a few hours ago, the FAA is now ordering fixes related to the anti-ice systems on the 737 MAX and the 787 jets. So it just seems like the headaches just don't stop.
We've been saying for months Boeing needs to take the issues seriously. I think the fact that they are going to possibly or most likely spend billions of dollars to repurchase Spirit shows both the board, it shows the FAA, the public, hey, we are willing to actually throw money away to bring quality back to the product. They should have done this a long time ago. It shouldn't have taken crises like this. I think Boeing is actually finally taking it seriously. And I think this is a really good step.
Well, yeah, I think so too. You know, the A321, we talk about the A321 like it can do no wrong, right? The A321 is like the winner is, you know, constantly getting these accolades. There's problems with the A321 that we're not talking about because the 737 issues totally supersede anything that's wrong with the A321. You have problems with the Pratt & Whitney engines. I'm hearing there's problems with the winglets. There's problems with the weight of the A321 XLR.
Get this. I don't think I texted you this. Yesterday, Southwest announced they were pausing pilot hiring for the rest of the year, for the next 10 months. Because they are not getting the deliveries from Boeing. Uh-huh. So this is starting to actually impact growth plans for airlines. Southwest has been planning to grow. We talked about United. They had MAX 10s on order. Now they've removed the MAX 10 from all of their fleet planning. And Scott Kirby is trying to get 321s in a side deal. He's trying to get 321s in a side deal with Airbus. Airlines are actually now realizing how serious this is, and their growth plans are being impacted by Boeing. But like you said, also Airbus, like the engine issues we've talked about, the winglets. I think we talked about like wing spar cracking on some airplanes with Airbus. It's not just Boeing. It's both manufacturers.
Well, and we'll... Maybe on the next show, we'll get more details, but I'm hearing the A321 XLR is heavier than it was expected to be, and it will not have the range that they promoted. It's still enough range for a lot of the missions that these airlines are planning the plane for, which is transatlantic, But it was supposed to be able to do Denver to Frankfurt. Can it still do that with these, with a heavier plane? So maybe we look at the A321 and be like, that's not perfect either. You know, we keep the whipping boy, sorry to say it, is the 737, but that's covering up other issues with the A321, which is not a new design either, Doug.
Time for the, what is it, the 787-3? All right, well, anyways.
Yeah, domestic.
Yeah. Anyways, Drew, our main topic
before
today.
Before you go on, you just mentioned something. The 737-10, just replace that program with a 787-3, which you've talked about. Make a smaller wing, smaller fuel tank, smaller galleys, 250 seats versus 230. I don't know. There you go. Problem solved. Yeah.
Drew, our main topic today is something that we luckily don't have to worry about as employees, but I'm not terribly long removed from having to deal with this, and many of our listeners probably still have to pay for their bags. American and JetBlue last week announced, followed shortly by United, that they're increasing checked bag fees to $40 at the airport, or, bing bang, $35 if you pay online ahead. This is the first increase in baggage fees since the start of the pandemic.
So I wonder if they still will offer, if you get one of, like, an American credit card or a United credit
card,
two bags for free. And the credit card is about $100 a year, so this is going to reel people in to, you know, their loyalty programs. This increase has gained traction among both mainstream media and social media, so we thought we would do a deep dive into the topic, at least from a U.S.-centric perspective. Spirit was the first airline to levy checked baggage fees on its passengers, charging $10 in the summer of 2007. By the summer of 2008, most U.S. airlines followed suit at $15, citing the high cost of oil as the reason. But what happens is when the cost of oil goes down, do the fees go away? Not necessarily.
No. Drew, I was in college at the time, and I can say I remember vividly trying to fill up my car that year and how much it cost. In fact, the weekend that Marissa moved into a new dorm room, I didn't even have the money to be able to drive to help her out. Until my friend Dave, I don't think Dave listens to the show, but I'm going to tell him to listen. He told me, dude, you have to go. And he actually handed me $20 in cash to fill up my car.
Times were tough.
I was a broke college student, and I could not afford, at that time it was like $350 to fill up my car, which seems like a bargain now, but 15 years ago in college, when it had been like $2 a gallon, and it almost doubled, jumped to $3-something, dude, I could not fill up my car to go help Marissa move into a new dorm room, and I needed a friend to actually give me money to drive an hour and a half away to help her out.
Well, at least, I mean, my sob story is Neil and I were stuck in Malaysia with like $40 to our name. Thankfully, Malaysia Airlines got us back.
Yeah.
So I needed way more than $20. All right. Since the inception of bag fees, airlines have largely unbundled their ticket pricing, meaning that you essentially pay for what services you want. Full fare tickets, mostly purchased by business accounts, come with everything provided. Business economy seats or the cheapest tickets available, many times don't even include...
Basic economy.
Oh, what did I say?
Business economy. Oh. There is no such thing as business economy.
I think I just created a product. Basic economy seats or the cheapest tickets available, many times don't even include a carry-on with the price of the ticket. It doesn't even include a seat number, Doug, until an hour prior.
You get whatever's left over. It's like non-revving, but you pay for it, basically. Check baggage fees, carry-on fees, and the like are all known as what we call ancillary fees, which are relatively lucrative for airlines around the world. In fact, last year alone, airlines made nearly $40 billion just in checked baggage fees. Many lawmakers have been fighting against these add-on fees, saying they should be included in the price of the ticket. The newest increase means a single checked bag will cost $40 when it only cost $15 two decades ago. Drew, how does this compare to inflation?
$15 when it used to be free, probably a decade ago before that. Anyway, that's a great question, Doug. If checked baggage fees kept up with inflation based on $15 in 2008, they would be roughly $22 today. That means baggage fees have nearly doubled the pace of inflation. However, there's a big asterisk here. The average airline ticket in June 2008, the month fees were introduced at most airlines, cost $311.24. That would be $440 in June 2023, according to the Bureau of Labor Statistics, who we love. The average price of a ticket in June 2023 in 2023 dollars was $279.22. That is $160 lower in real pricing than it was in 2008. So it kind of makes sense that the airlines kind of want to bridge the gap because airline costs aren't going down. These numbers do not include any ancillary fees, but it's clear to see even with the fees, most airfares are still lower than what they were prior to the introduction.
This is one thing the media is not reporting. The media is jumping all over the airlines saying that it's a cash grab. They're trying, like, airlines are making more money than they've ever made. Whereas 3 years ago, the airlines were losing so much money and everyone was complaining about that. Mm-hmm. And now that the airlines are making money and trying to save money for mm-hmm. a rainy day, now people are complaining. And if we look at this, $440 in 2008, that's what the average, in 2023 numbers, $440 was the average airfare.
Yeah.
And now it's $279 and you're having to pay $40 for a check bag, maybe add on a sandwich and a mm-hmm. pre-assigned seat. You are not even touching what it cost in 2008 for an airfare. Airfare today, even with the ancillary fees, is still probably like $50 less on average than it was back then.
Oh, yeah. And meanwhile, labor costs have probably almost doubled. Fuel costs yes. have done the same. The cost of airplanes haven't gone down.
I know we work for the airlines, but I don't blame the airlines for increasing these fees.
It's still affordable. Most people can afford to travel. And why is that? It's because the airlines are so efficient, right? We're so efficient at our business that we are able to carry masses of people. I'm seeing, like on my shift, I'm seeing 777s going to the West Coast in the morning, San Diego, for example, with 364 mm-hmm. people. That's because of low airfares. It's not a thousand. I remember in the 90s when I was in college, I remember them talking about airfares between San Francisco and Washington, D.C. being $1,000. This was during the dot-com bubble, and people were paying that. This was in the 90s.
Yeah.
And now freak out if it, you know, at that
point. I remember it when I was in college in the mid 2000s, flying home. If I could find something around $300 round trip, I was happy.
Yeah.
When we fly to Denver to see our family, I know we can non-rev, but mm-hmm. there are times where we just have to buy tickets. Yeah. If I find something for $300, I'm like, wow, that's really expensive. This is 15 years later. I was flying from Denver to the Midwest for $300 15 years ago. And I was like, ooh, I paid $300. That's a deal. Like that, yeah. that is super cheap. Now, if I pay $300, I'm like, oh man, that's really expensive.
Well, yeah.
Inflation, $300 15 years ago would be yeah. like $400 today.
Oh,
so
it's
the bar has actually shifted in the cheaper direction.
Yeah, if you want to be mad at people for inflation, be mad at everyone else, not the airlines. I'll give you yes. an example. You know Cease Chocolate, which is from California. I bought a couple boxes for the Lufthansa and Swiss Cruise.
Yeah,
and
you talked about that. Yep.
And they're fresh. They're the best chocolate in the world. So if you're listening in the world, you're visiting California, get some Cease Chocolate. Get it at a Cease store where they have the fresh ones and you can choose it. Anyway, when I was a kid, a box of Cease chocolates, a pound box of Cease chocolates was $7. When I was going to college, it was $11 or so. And I thought, oh, mm-hmm. my God, it's getting so expensive. And then when I would visit my mom, I'd pick up a box at SFO to take her. It was like $15. I'm like, this is ridiculous. Do you know how much those boxes that I bought those flight attendants, you know how much they were, Doug? How much a 1 pound box of Cease chocolate is now?
$20.
$32.
Blame chocolate.
Blame Cease chocolate.
Yeah, blame Pippa. Blame chocolate. Yeah.
But anyway, what is that, right? So it went from $10, let's say 40 years ago. It has quadrupled in price. Yeah. And airline
which
tickets
is,
have
which
actually
is way
gone
more
down.
Than inflation. Yes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Just saying.
All right, well, we could talk about this for hours, probably, but we have to move on to our ops center. Drew, we had a listener ask us what it's like as we prepare for our work days. We thought that this would be a great ops topic for this week. Why don't you go first, but don't include your commute on the Beltway.
I'm not going to include my commute on the Beltway, but I got to tell you, my planning for... So he wants to know how our shift starts, right, for both of us and how we plan... Not yeah. the whole thing, just the startup. I start at 6 a.m., but I wake up at 3:45. that's when I start my planning because I'm crazy.
Okay.
And I'm
so wait a minute. Your shift starts at 6.
Mm-hmm.
You wake up 2 hours and 15 minutes before.
Yeah. I wake up at 3:45 because I need half an hour just to like go through my emails, read the ridiculous messages from you guys, the AvGeek messages. You know, it makes me laugh, so it wakes me up, right? Check your memes about pilots who don't know what airplanes are called, stuff like that. So I read those, but I'm also, I look at the weather, I look at anything that happened the night before to see if there's any hot buttons that I'm going to have to deal with right away. And if it's really bad, I will send a message to the midnight person just to ask if they're okay, do they have any questions, if there's an overnight delay to London, that the plane is still there and they're still trying. I will get involved.
So you know what you're walking into.
Yeah, it's all about getting ahead of the game. So that's 3:45. Then I take my shower. I get in the car about 4:45. I start driving. I get to the airport at 5:30. Get in about 5:45. My shift starts at 6. And I walk in, and I kind of know what's going on from the chats because I'm looking at the overnight chats. But I go directly to the midnight person who has been there, and I'm like, all right, is anything on fire? Because before I start doing my planning, is there something that I can help with that's going on right away? So then I go to my desk, and I sign in, and thanks to Michael Gates and Microsoft 10 or whatever we're using, it takes minutes to sign in.
Who's Michael Gates? Bill Gates?
Bill Gates. It's early in the morning. I'm putting myself in the morning. I'm not fully awake till 9 a.m. No. So Bill Gates, thanks to Bill Gates and Microsoft 10, which we actually love, but it takes forever to sign in because there's so much memory on these computers. I don't know what all the programs that we have on there. That takes about 3 minutes. So I use that time to walk around the room, just say hi to people. Hey, how you doing? Do you need anything? Hey, you know, you look great. How are your kids? You know, it's nice to start off that way before I start, you know, hey, what's going on with the APU on this? Why are we not bored?
Yeah.
You know,
walk in and start yelling at people.
You got some niceties to start the day. I have to then get ready for the 6:30 call, which I host, and it has all the departments. And we want to do the call in 15 minutes. You would think it's an easy call because it's 15 minutes. No, it's very important, and sometimes managing directors are on there. So I have to curate items from all over, things that I think could affect the operation and that I think people should know about. So real quick, the items that I talk about. So I get all the stuff, go into the room. The first thing I talk about is safety. So we have a company safety message that's the same throughout the company. So it'll be remember to wear your earplugs for hearing protection, for example. And it's nice because the company's, everyone's talking about it. So it's, you know, kind of stays in your mind. Then I'll quickly talk about the stats. Because we're always talking about stats, but if we don't tell them how they did the day before, who cares, right? It's meaningless. So I'll congratulate the station if we made our departure on time goals, if we made our baggage goals. If we didn't, I'll say why. All right, so 15 minutes. So the clock is running, so I'm doing this very quickly. Then I talk about the weather very quickly. If San Francisco is having a beautiful sunny day, I don't talk about it. I only talk about the issues that we could have. You guys at SFO actually do have issues right now. So I'll talk about the SFO flow control delays.
Runway closure. Yep.
Mm-hmm. And then this last week, I was also talking about high winds in Newark, which could cause flow delays. And I was also talking about Caribbean. There was a chance that we could have en route flow control delays for traffic going to the Caribbean because we still have the snowbirds coming and going. And I don't know, I guess spring break keeps starting earlier, so we might see some of that traffic. Then I talk about any significant irregular operations. So if the Sao Paulo flight had maintenance or a crew issue and it's now an overnight delay, I want a lot of attention on that. So I'll take time to talk about that. Even though I'm not talking about every maintenance item, I'm talking about that because that is a huge focus item and we need everyone to make sure that these people get out of Dulles because they've been here overnight. Then I start going around the room, so to speak. It's a virtual room. So the main players are in the room, but a lot of people are on a big screen. So I go to the gate manager. The gate manager is like the conductor of an orchestra. So that person is in the office. That person is glued. That person is in contact with NOC in Chicago. that person is also talking to ramp ops, customer service ops, flight attendant desk, all that. So that's a central person. So she or he is going to give us a quick overview with a little bit more detail than I have.
Do they tap the stand and then hold up their hands? They get everyone on the same page.
Yeah, we actually have one who does that. And she's like, all right, listen. She does more than tap. She will tell you. You would think we'd go to another management person or a supervisory person. No, the next person we go to is actually the customer service connect planner, who is a customer service agent who has information on the connections, anything that could be a risk, anything we want to consider holding. And the reason we do that is that affects everyone. So if we have 40 people connecting from Ghana, from Accra, that are going to Orlando, we may have to hold Orlando. That affects everyone who is working that Orlando flight, everyone in the room. So that person is key. So we'll see if we have any connection issues. And then after that, we just go around the room. Maintenance is next. Now, this is where there's a lot of voices. And my job is to amplify anything that someone says that could be an issue. So maintenance is going to go through all the planes that are out of service, and they're going to go through things that are wrong with specific planes. So they may mention, hey, on Orlando today, we have the APU pneumatics in up, and they're just going to move on. But I will make a note of that. And after he stops talking, I'll be like, all right, APU pneumatics in up. So we're going to need an air start for that flight. An air start requires some additional time. So let's plan to close that plane up at least 10 minutes prior so that we have time for the air start. That's just an example. Or maintenance could say, the ACARS printer is in op on the flight on the 777 to SFO. What does that mean? That means ramp is going to have to print you, Doug, the hazmat form because your printer doesn't work. That means maintenance will have to make you a hard copy of the MRD. That means we'll have to have Feeling bring you a copy.
MRD, what is that?
Maintenance release document. It also means that the fuelers are going to have to bring you a paper copy of the fuel slip because you're not getting any of these on the ACARS printer. But if I didn't mention that, one of those is going to be missed, and that is going to be a delay on a 777 hub-to-hub. So I'm looking for these things that could be a bigger problem, that could turn into bigger problems. Then we go to all the departments again. We go to ramp, customer service. We go to flight ops, the pilot group. The pilot group, that guy is a retired company pilot, and they are a wealth of information. So they will see something. They'll see a speed break that is deferred. An auto brake? What's the one? An auto throttle that's deferred on a flight going to Key West. I'm like, oh, okay. All right. Well, that can be deferred. That's not a big thing. No. So they're looking at this. They know that Key West is a short one way. So that person may raise his hand and be like, that could be an issue. You may want to change planes. So then I take that information. I tell the gate man, hey, look for something else because this is going to be refused by the crew because it's a very short runway in Key West. Would we have known that if we didn't have that expert in the room?
Probably not, no.
Probably not. Then we have the flight attendant supervisor in the room. They have standby flight attendants. So if we have any late connecting flight attendants, we'll tell them these flights are late. They'll see if flight attendants are on that. And they'll have people pre-board a flight until those connecting flight attendants board. Then we go to our business partners, see if they have any issues, the cleaners, the feelers, and whatnot. And then lastly, we go to the senior leadership. So if the director is on the call, you go to them, and then you go by rank with the final word being the managing director. So you let them finish, and then I'll just be like, all right. And on that note, let's have a safe day. Call's ended. And all this in 15 minutes.
And then you go to work, and then you start your shift.
No, then I actually go and get a cup of coffee because I've already done a lot of work. No, I'm serious. I go get a coffee because that's probably the only time I'm going to have time to go up and get something. Then I'll come back. Everything should be planned out. I sit down, and then for the shift, I'm just keeping a pulse on the operation to make sure it's going as planned. And if there's anything that could be a problem, I'm responding to that. But other than that, it's a machine. It's running really well because we did all that good planning. That's it. That's a lot. And it's only 6:15.
Don't say that's it. That's a lot of work.
But it's only it's only 6:45. I mean, we haven't even started pushing the bank yet. All right, your turn.
Well, tell you what, we've gone long this week. My parents' flight is about to land. Why don't we tease it and we can do my week next week?
Yes. Okay. I like it.
part two. Listeners, come back. Don't leave us.
Well, I'm kind of disappointed.
I need to go get Starbucks.
I have a lot of questions.
Good. Save them. I need to go get Starbucks. Pippa, do you have to go pee? No, she doesn't, but I do. So all right. We'll do it next week.
All right. All right. Let's do it next week. Sorry I went long, but there's a lot
of
stuff.
No, I learned a lot. This is great for me because I just show up at the plane. You guys take care of everything. I don't know any of this.
Well, just to finish that, once you get on the plane, everything should be set up for you, for the flight attendants, for the customer service agents. If you're showing up and the ground power is not hooked up, the catering is not on, the fuel is not on, that's something that my department would have to answer to. Right, so we want everything.
One thing I can tell you that I learned through my training is every single flight for our company and probably every company around the world, do you know how many people it takes to get that one airplane off the ground?
Ooh, no idea. I'm sure it's
8,000.
So 8,000 people have their hand in it.
Every single flight has 8,000 people behind it to get that one single airplane off the ground when it comes to, and that accounts for everything. That accounts for training, it accounts for catering and maintenance and dispatch and ops and airport, all of that. 8,000 people is what it takes to get a single airplane off the ground.
When you're sitting on an airplane and you're looking at the time and it's an 8:15 departure and
it's 8:25 and you're frustrated, just think about the 8,000 people that are trying to get that airplane or that have impacted that flight in one way or another. Yes.
Right. Or it's 8:12 and you feel the pushback. Just know that that doesn't just happen. There was a lot of work that went into pushing that plane earlier.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah. It's amazing.
All right. Tune in next week for part two. I'll talk about my stuff. Save your questions. I've got quite a bit that I can talk about as well. I will tease the one thing. You wake up, you get out of bed 2 hours mm-hmm. and 15 minutes before you show up to work.
Yeah.
I leave my house 6 hours before I take off.
I know. Yeah, it's ridiculous.
That's funny. That's funny.
Yeah, that is the right reaction.
We'll talk about that next week. All right. Well, to our friends and contributors, this podcast is your show. So go on our website, nexttripnetwork.com. Let us know what's on your mind so we can talk about it. Or give us your feedback. You can also follow us on Instagram at Next Trip Podcast. Please tell your friends about us so we can reach more people who love aviation and travel.
Okay. All right, Pippa, thank you for the free background audio.
I'm not editing any of that out.
You know, people pay a lot of money for these laugh tracks, and we have it for free. Yeah. All right.
It's like a sitcom.
You can also call our Google Voice number to ask a question or just rant about something like Pippa is right now. The number is 872-529-5620 when calling from the U.S. Make sure to use the country code 001 or +1 when calling from abroad. Thanks to all of our friends and contributors, especially in Japan, Doug, where we are number one this week.
Number one. So, yep. Oh, and Finland. We're on the charts in Finland.
We're on the charts in Finland. So thank you very much, everyone. We'll see you next week. And in the meantime, stay aviation tough.
This has been the Next Trip Podcast. Visit nexttripnetwork.com for information about previous episodes, trip reviews, aviation photos, and other aviation-related content. This is your show, so search for The Next Trip on Twitter and let Doug and Drew know what you want to talk about. Not on Twitter? You can also email them at nexttrip.podcast@gmail.com. Please consider leaving a review wherever you download your podcasts. It will help other listeners like you discover this show.